Carmelo Hayes. Yeah, he's about to be tricked. Good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday night, July 26th, 2023. You are tuning in to the latest edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony, as always. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Keep supporting the website, DonTony.com. Keep downloading all the episodes, the audio shows. I love doing video. Don't get me wrong. I have fun doing YouTube. But the audio shows are the lifeline of what I do. Without them, the shows would have been long gone. Now, we haven't done a Wednesday Night Dynamite for 2 weeks. Last week, the 25th of July, Kevin Castle and yours truly did a special episode looking at a bulk of the AEW roster and whose stock has gone up over the last 12 months and who has gone down. The week prior, we covered WWE and NXT. So I am back for this evening. I want to open up talking a little bit of NXT. We got the Great American Bash coming up this weekend. I will give you my quick predictions. Then we'll talk a little AEW and get out of here. Plus, the rating is in for the 25th of July's NXT. And since we have that rating, we can now look at the last 3 weeks of Judgment Day main eventing NXT. Who can have bragging rights for the top rating for their match? And who had the lowest? Now, to be fair, most people did not know that Rhea Ripley was going to take on Taya Valkyria until Tuesday morning, the day of the show. Yes, Monday night, we were just doing a little preview for NXT, and just in passing, I said, you know, Rhea Ripley is the only Judgment Day member that has not wrestled, you know, since being part of Judgment Day in NXT, and I wonder if she's going to wrestle Lyra Valkyria, and sure enough, literally the closing moments of Monday's post-Raw show that we did, I saw my DMs blowing up a little bit. It went from 2 to 5 in about 30 seconds. So I clicked on it while the outro, the Goodfellas outro, was playing. And people were telling me, DT, while you were doing your show, they announced Lyra Valkyria versus Rhea Ripley. So it was a good match. I'll say this before we get into Mello, because there is a little rant that I have to go on. And I think people were reluctantly agree with what I'm going to say. But Rhea Ripley, what a difference in 24 hours. Looking at a 24-hour period with Rhea Ripley, it's pretty wild when you go from one gamut on WWE Raw, her destroying Liv Morgan. I mean, putting Liv Morgan's arm in a chair twice and Liv Morgan hysterically crying in pain, selling it like $1 trillion. Rhea Ripley taunting her, watch me, because that's Liv's entrance, watch me. And Rhea's like, watch me, go back to rehab. And Sinister, and Rhea Ripley getting major heat on Monday's Raw. And yes, Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio opening up NXT July 25th. They got big time heat as well. But at the end of NXT, after Rhea Ripley defeated Lyra Valkyria, Rhea Ripley showing a boatload of respect to Lyra. Prove to me, beat JC Jane at the Great American Bash. I'll tell you the truth, I didn't even realize that they were having a match at the Great American Bash. And the funny thing is, I looked at the preview, and when we do predictions in a few moments, and no, they don't have a match at the Great American Bash. But Rhea Ripley telling Lyra Carrier, prove me right. Beat JC Jane. You know, Rhea Ripley on Monday, sinister, evil, putting Liv Morgan in a hospital. 24 hours later, showing a lot of respect towards Lyra Valkyria. And the crowd cheered Rhea quite a bit after the match was over. You know, it's just, it's interesting to see that 24-hour time span with Rhea Ripley on television. Her match with Lyra was very good. But maybe the rating was affected a little bit because not everybody was aware that Rhea Ripley was going to be wrestling since they made the announcement so late on a Monday night. But we'll definitely compare all the members of Judgment Day and how they fared in the ratings. for NXT the last 3 weeks. But before I go any further, I got to have a little quick conversation about Carmelo Hayes. Because this weekend, he's taking on Ilya Dragunov. He's putting his NXT Heavyweight Championship on the line. And anybody that's been following my shows know how much I am a fan. I'm a fan of both guys, but Ilya Dragunov, I hope this guy goes to the main roster. I would love to see him team up with Ludwig Kaiser. I think Ilya Dragunov and Ludwig Kaiser would be tremendous. You know, plus, nothing against Giovanni Vinci, but Giovanni Vinci is Italian. You know, when you look at Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser, you feel Germany. You feel Austria. You know, Italian with it. Yes, they're European, but I think Ilya would look 10 times better in Imperium, even though I love Ilya as a babyface. But with that said, and I know I'm giving one small prediction early, but my heart tells me that Ilya is not defeating Carmelo Hayes for the NXT Championship this weekend. I don't think so at all. But for about a month, I have been talking about concern that I have for Carmelo Hayes, and please do not misconstrue that. Carmelo Hayes is going to be a major star on the WWE roster. You can see it. He's got the look. He's got the attitude. He's got the charisma. Even though him as a babyface may not be gelling as good as WWE and NXT had hoped for with regards to the fans and the connection, you know, Carmelo Hayes, you know, his personality feels more heelish than anything else. But with that said, giving all that praise to Carmelo Hayes, he's got a problem. He has a problem. And there's a lot of people out there that will not admit it. Everything has to be cake and ice cream, fluff, as I like to use. And Carmelo Hayes is stuck in the mud. He's putting on great matches. He is representing NXT in a very high level. But he is stuck in the mud. Outside of Bron Breakker, there is nobody on that NXT roster that you feel is going to have a good, nice, deep summer feud against Carmelo Hayes. Don't get me wrong. Dijak, I would love to see get a feud with Carmelo Hayes. But Ilya Dragunov, they've kind of burned through a little bit quicker than we wanted. Yes, there's always a chance of a rematch, but it feels like they're burning through him very, very quickly. Bron Breakker, I don't see them revisiting that since they did have a little bit of an extended feud. Baron Corbin, they already went through. You look at that NXT roster, yes, there are very capable men that could go toe-to-toe with Carmelo Hayes. But will the fans be interested and interested in the masses? And unfortunately, there isn't anybody, with the exception of one person. Somebody that I said a month ago, a lot of people like, DT, you're nuts, they ain't splitting the two. Trust me, there are people out there that are convinced because of the popularity that AEW will not split Adam Cole and MJF. Oh, they're going to be so devastated when that happens soon. Because the devil does not change his ways. The devil appears in many different shapes, sizes. And MJF will reveal his true colors and turn on his partner. It may not happen this week. It may not happen next week. But it is happening soon. I don't care what the ratings are on TV. But when I said a month ago that Trick Williams is going to turn on Carmelo Hayes, nobody thought that that was going to happen. Number one, there was no signs of it. Number two, they work so well together. Why would you mess that up? And I agree with you. To me, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, well, let me put it this way. Trick Williams to Carmelo Hayes is J.C. Jane to Gigi Dolin, or Gigi Dolin to J.C. Jane. When they decided to feud Gigi and J.C., they pretty much immediately got stuck in the mud. I mean, what's going on with both of them right now? Yeah, JC Jane a little bit going on with Lyra Valkyrie. And yeah, you have Gigi Dolan a little bit with Kiana James, but that's filler. That's filler. WWE split them up, especially after Mandy Rose was released, and they've never been the same. Unfortunately, a month ago, as I'm watching Carmelo Hayes, I'm saying to myself, who's he going to feud with during this year? I mean, sure, we could get an influx of some WWE main roster people who are not doing all that well right now. And yeah, you could easily put someone in that position. But as far as NXT talent goes, full-time NXT wrestlers, the only person that I see is Trick Williams. And after watching NXT yesterday, I believe it 10 times more now than I did a month ago. And I was the only person online talking about Trick Williams turning on Carmelo Hayes. People thought it was nuts. I think it's coming. Will it happen at the Great American Bash? I don't know. I don't know. Nobody pays me that much, and I don't work for NXT. But, you know, we get little crumbs here and there, so that's all fun. But to be honest with you, even if I could get that answer, I probably don't want to know. I want to be surprised like everyone else out there. But once Carmelo Hayes overcomes Ilya Dragunov, now what? Now what? I think it's going to be Trick Williams, and it's going to upset a lot of people out there. You know, some people also think I'm crazy when I've said over the last couple of months, do not discount Trick Williams also as becoming a big star in the main roster. Trick Williams has something. He's got the look. He's got the charisma. You know, he's got all the tools. Something is going to click and put it all together, and that guy is going to be a big star in the main roster. Will he become an even bigger star than Carmelo Hayes? That's, you know, to be told. We don't know. But Trick Williams, he ain't no sidekick. And he definitely ain't no Marty Jannetty to Shawn Michaels. Trick Williams, I think, is going to be a much bigger star than people anticipate. And, yeah, I could see him being the heel in this, turning against Carmelo Hayes. And I could see the storyline already. Ever since Carmelo Hayes won that championship, no pun intended, it's all about him. It's all about him. What about us? And I think that's where Trick Williams is going to go with this. And if you follow my shows on a regular basis when we talk about NXT storylines and even AEW storylines, we usually hit it. You know why? Not because we're that intelligent, guys. It's because we pay attention. We watch the shows week in and week out. We don't just read results, envision in our heads what went down, and then act like you know everything. You know, even the Baron Corbin stuff, even the Von Wagner stuff that's happening now. Von Wagner almost, you know, babyface sympathy for being Frankenstein after what happened to him as an infant. And you know what? Speaking of Von Wagner, I want to make a comment now. If it sounds like I'm sipping on coffee, that's because I am. Because I'm recording this early. It is Wednesday afternoon. I am trying to get a head start on the show so I could get a little early sleep tonight. Watching the entire episode of AEW this evening is probably not going to happen. We'll definitely go over some AEW stuff. A few things to get into. And yes, people have been asking me my thoughts on Dave Meltzer's interview with Chris Van Vliet. I always say Vlay, and, you know, I have to force myself. You remember when I used to say Dominic Dijakovic? Remember when I say Dominic Dijakovic, and then I was like, no, it's Dijakovic, and I had to force myself. Even Konosuke Takeshita, I used to say Konosuke Takeshita, until Excalibur, you know, corrected us all. It's Takeshita, not Takeshita. So I have to get into the habit of saying it that way. But I'll say this about Von Wagner very quickly. I watched his match yesterday against Javier Bernal, and it was a very good match. It was quick. It was very good. Von Wagner was smooth. Crowd was chanting, tables, they wanted to see Von Wagner put somebody through a table, and he did. And it looked good. But something I noticed on Tuesday night with Von Wagner, and, you know, I don't know, you know, how much WWE and NXT takes criticism or advice or opinions from people online. I know they pull the net. I know they will vanity search themselves sometimes. I know they will check out shows. I know that there's people there. I'm friendly with some people that check out my shows. People are still convinced to this day that a lot of Tony D'Angelo is, some of the ideas were based off our shows. I mean, you think about it. We had to sit down here before they did the sit down. Everybody that is a channel member here, I always called them the family. I'm Tony D. You know, there's so many things. The hand gesture. I mean, you look at Tony D'Angelo for the first 3 months that he debuted on the NXT roster, and you look at him now, almost everything they say and do kind of reflects all the banter on the shows I've been doing here, which it's cool. It might be all coincidence. You know, I've been told sometimes not all coincidence. And hey, any way we can all help anybody out there, anybody we support, you know, it's not like, no, if you're not a professional, I'm not going to take your advice. I think Von Wagner needs to slow his shit down. I mean, some people have compared Von Wagner with his height and his size and his face and the beard to Big John Studd. I don't really see it, but I understand why people say that. But one thing about Von Wagner that takes away from his character that I wish WWE would address immediately. I wish somebody would get to Von Wagner. Maybe Von Wagner gets to himself and thinks about it. That motherfucker moves too fast in that ring. I've said it about Wardlow as well. But Wardlow goes to the top rope because he thinks that that just makes the aura of Wardlow look even more impressive. Like, holy shit, this big man goes over the off the top turnbuckle. It's not needed. But with Von Wagner, he's moving around as if he's a buck 90, and it's not necessary. I'm watching the match yesterday. You go back and you look at Goldberg. You go back and you look at even, you know, average talent that were never mega stars. Shit, I was watching some old school ECW the other day, and I was reminded of 911, who used to be in ECW. And yeah, he was terrible in the ring, but he got tremendously over. And what a lot of these big men would do is they would do everything slow. Not lazy slow, but methodical slow. You know, like Von Wagner, if he slowed his shit down and the fans just get into it and he, you know, does it slow and the fans he teases it and the fans want to see something. Again, go back to old Goldberg. I'm not saying Von Wagner is going to become a Goldberg type star, but you see some of the Big Show. You look at Kane back in the day, Undertaker. You look at Diesel, Kevin Nash. You look at a lot of big guys. And yes, I know some people out there are going to say, well, DT, that was the 80s and the 90s, and, you know, it's much different now. No, you could take big men over the last 10, 15 years. A lot of guys that are that big, they do their shit slow. Because when they do nail a move, you sink, it sinks in. It penetrates. You have a moment to reflect, like, boom! This guy is going so fast in his match. It almost feels like, hey, Von, you got 3 minutes. Make him good. And he's got 15 things that he wants to do in 3 minutes, where if he just took a step back, slowed down, taking the fans' reaction, you know, tease a power move to the fans and execute it, and fans go nuts, and he turns around because he's acknowledging the crowd now. If you watch Tuesday's NXT, after he does some moves, he's turning around and he's looking for fan support. If he slowed that shit down, the fans would eat it up 10 times more. I mean, I really emphatically hope that Von Wagner slows this shit down. It'll help his character, his in-ring work, and it'll stand out that much more. So just a couple of quick thoughts on him. So NXT last night. Yeah, you know what? Because we got Great American Bash coming up in a couple of days. You know, we'll do predictions, but I want to quickly give you the results from yesterday and go over some ratings. And, you know, a couple other things went down yesterday that's very important. Gable Steveson, there's been a lot of rumors, a lot of reports that he was going to pursue more, you know, outside of pro wrestling and his Olympic, you know, wrestling background. And yesterday on NXT, he announced that he is going to, you know, remain in NXT, sign with NXT. He gets confronted by Baron Corbin, which I actually liked. Because remember, Baron Corbin, quote-unquote, retired Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle had his last match against Baron Corbin. And Baron Corbin could try to retire another Olympic gold medalist in Gable Steveson. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but kind of full circle. When you look at Baron Corbin getting involved with another Olympic gold medalist, wouldn't it be cool if Kurt Angle were to make an appearance over the weekend for the Great American Bash? I think that would be cool. I think that would be pretty awesome. I almost feel like that should be necessary because this card right now, it's lacking. It is lacking. It's not bad, but it's lacking. Lacking to the point that I don't think there's going to be as much interest as people think there's going to be, even though Dominic Mysterio is wrestling on the show. But yesterday, as far as NXT goes with match results, Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams, and Ilya Dragunov over the Schism. You know, a little bit of controversy in this match also. You know, we had some mass figures act at ringside like they were aligned with the Schism, but they knocked out the Schism, the Dyad. And some people think it could be the Creed brothers on the masks. Remember, the Creed brothers lost a loser leaves NXT, and maybe they came back for a little revenge yesterday. But also, we had a little bit of a faux pas with Dragunov and Trick Williams. You know, Trick Williams is not happy with Ilya Dragunov. You know, basically inadvertent shot. And we closed out NXT with Trick Williams calling out Dragunov to the ring, and man, Trick Williams took a fucking beatdown. And Ilya was about to finish him off, and here comes Melo, takes the bullet for his buddy. Even though he did that, I still think that he will be turned against by Trick Williams. But yesterday, we had Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams, and Ilya Dragunov over the Schism. Von Wagner beating Javier Bernal, as I said earlier. We also had Dana Brooke beating Cora Jade in a kendo stick match. Now, last week, we all feared that Dana Brooke was winning this match, and she did. I think there's more concern, not that Dana Brooke beat Cora Jade, because I saw the lashback over the last 24 hours about Dana Brooke winning this match. Dana Brooke's been in WWE for 8 years, and people are, you know, upset. Like, why are they trying to push Dana Brooke at Cora Jade's expense? I wonder if this losing streak that Cora Jade has been on, or this rut, that might be the better way to put it, over the last couple of months, safe to say, I wonder if this is more of a test by WWE to see how she reacts to being quote-unquote de-pushed. You know, that is something that a lot of people don't talk about. It's not a topic that's very popular to talk about. But back in the day, even when I was doing a Blackhearts Sports Entertainment Hotline with Mad Zombie and Brian Damage back in the early 2000s, you know, we knew at the time that some wrestlers were going on these losing streaks. And as far as a wrestling fan is concerned, you're a little confused. Like, why are they jobbing this person out? I remember a couple of years ago, was it Miro? It might have been Miro was getting jobbed out a little bit. There was someone else, and it's escaping me right now, but I remember we used to have rants about it, and this person was on a crazy losing streak, and no, I'm not talking about jobbers, but the point is we would find out over the years that wrestlers were put in positions to lose multiple matches to test how they would react to it. I remember La Resistance. That's one of the earliest ones that we talked about. They were brought in and they were given the tag team championships immediately, you know, not because they deserved it. You know, a lot of times you're rewarded of a championship because you have proven yourself and they want you to elevate the title. In the case of La Resistance and some others, they're given the titles to try to elevate them and try to do it quickly. And they put them on a losing streak. And I think it was Rene Dupree, you know, was not receptive, you know, didn't like. And you know, of course, none of these wrestlers are going to admit this publicly. But WWE does do those mind games with wrestlers that somebody will go on a losing streak. And you'll be a little bit confused by it. But sometimes WWE does that to test how that person reacts. If the person complains, or if that person, Karrion Kross, you know, not too long ago, before, I mean, he ultimately got released, but they, even now, some people think that some of the losses that he's had, LA Knight, some people behind the scenes think that WWE is testing him to see, you know, how this guy reacts to it. Yes, the fans chanting louder and louder isn't helping LA Knight because WWE thinks they're doing something really, really correct right now. I mean, it's helping, but you know what I mean. So Cora Jade being on this extended rut might be more of a test to see how she reacts to, you know, her not getting the opportunity. Look, Cora Jade's going to be a star. I mean, barring injury or her just screwing up, she's going to be a star. Dana Brooke yesterday, you got to give her a little credit. You know, she took some pretty damn stiff Singapore cane shots. You know, early on in that match, if you look at it closely and if you want to be honest about it, you know, putting criticism towards her or sympathy towards her aside, you got to be honest about it. You know, she, her timing is still off. It takes her extra time to roll in the ring, roll out of the ring, to hit a move. Sometimes she's got to set herself up in the corner before she actually does a move. When she was taking some shots yesterday, she was like pulling her body backwards to like brace herself for the shots. You know, it's there's obviously a lot of holes that still need to be filled to fix her. And just an attitude change is not enough. I still think Dana Brooke will be turning heel. Don't know exactly when, but I think she turns on Kalani Jordan and she turns heel. But she beat Cora Jade, Dana Brooke, yesterday in a kendo stick match. It was pretty good, man. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. The family, Tony D'Angelo and Stax over Bronco Nima and Lucian Price. How do you all feel about that Grand Theft Auto theme that they gave to Bronco Nima and Lucian Price? From the font of their names to the graphics to the color, it is all Grand Theft Auto. It's almost like Crime Time meets Grand Theft Auto. And I'm not complaining. I mean, they just started. So it is way too early to praise or criticize. But, you know, right now, all right, you got me interested. If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. I kind of like it. It's I'm telling you, it's Crime Time meets Grand Theft Auto. What else did we have yesterday? Oh, they had this really ridiculous segment with the metaphor, and Noam Dar gets out of his vegetative state because they give him a copy Heritage Cup, and this leads to a dark match, a pre-show match that's going to happen at the Great American Bash. I'll give you the match when we go into predictions. The video package hyping up Thea Hale. You know, listen, I feel even Tiffany Stratton's reign is already stuck in the mud. And I don't know if it's necessarily her fault, though, but she's a champ now for a couple of months, and Thea Hale has been really her only threat. But I will say this, the video package yesterday for Thea Hale, kind of like spoofing Rocky a little bit, the movie Rocky, I got into it. And I think Thea Hale has done a hell of a lot in a short period of time. And she's, I think Tiffany Stratton said in her video package, I say she's a human Red Bull or a human energy drink. And that is true. It is true. But in the end, I think we know where this outcome is going to go at the Great American Bash. Rhea Ripley in a non-title match defeated Lyra Valkyria. A very decent match. And we had the head-to-head, you know, little confrontation with Ilya and Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes getting involved. We also had, and, you know, it had the potential of being good, and to me it fell off the rails. Blair Davenport is, like, recording a selfie, walking into, like, a gas station store. You know, like, these little stores that you find, like, at a gas station that usually sells, like, you know what I mean. She walks in, and I guess Roxanne Perez was following her, and Roxanne nails her from behind. There's, like, one woman inside the store that's acting, like, frozen next to the freezer, and she runs out of the store. Some jabroni is behind the counter, and he's crouching down. He doesn't even, if a suspension of disbelief, he doesn't even say, yo, knock it off, I'm going to call the cops. No, he just literally, like, crouches down. He becomes a fucking mute. And they brawled, and the brawl was fine. But I've never seen a little gas station store have that many security cameras inside the store. It must have had, like, 12 cameras. I mean, and the cameras were moving along. It was too much, man. It fell off the rails. And then the best part, to me, the cheesiest, and yes, listen, I don't put NXT under the microscope because it's developmental. You know, I don't compare NXT ratings to Collision or to Dynamite because you compare, and even when people are like, oh, well, the rating went up on NXT because they had a WWE person on, so what? I mean, you want the young talents incorporating, you know, doing some work, mingling with the top roster to see where they are. Listen, that match with Lyra Valkyrie versus Rhea Ripley on Tuesday's NXT, when Lyra Valkyrie said that she wants to see where she stands in the WWE, that's legit. That's legit. If she could go toe-to-toe with Rhea Ripley, even though, you know, it's scripted, but if she can hang and her timing is there and she's quick and she's, you know, smooth, that says a lot. That's why Zoe Stark made it so quickly. That's why even Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, and yes, they haven't really done much with them yet, but that's why they got the fast track to that main roster. So the brawl was fine yesterday, but it had too many camera shots, and the worst part, the cheesiest part, was the cop police sirens. The store door is closed, and you hear these sirens, and it's getting louder and louder, and I'm like, the store door is closed, and it just was so cheesy the way that they spliced in the police sirens from the cars. And somehow Roxanne Perez was able to just walk out of the store and say, I'll see you at the bash, bitch. It just was a little too cheesy for my standards, but you know, it's NXT, so I don't take it that seriously. So that was just a brief overview with NXT. Now, NXT on Tuesday night, the 25th, did a rating of 703,000. That is slightly down from last week's 746. But NXT clearly having a really nice 3 months. A really nice 3 months. And yes, look, the 4th of July was a holiday. They did 508. We put that aside. But when you look at, like, February to the beginning of May, their ratings were 562, 589, 555, 624, 590, 550, 620, 555. So you get an idea. You know, it's more like mid-fives to barely hitting a six once in a while. Now, since the end of May, you got 607, 615, 581, 773, 622, 671, 746, 703. And understand, too, even though we did have Judgment Day on that show the last 3 weeks, you know, these shows are 2 hours. It's not like that they were on the show for 30 minutes and they were there for half the show. You know, they are on the show for 15 minutes, maybe 20. You're talking about 1/8 to 1/7 of a show. So the fact that they are getting decent viewership and the fans are sticking around to watch the whole show, because that is something. And I wish you all had back to back to back what the ratings look like, you know, as far as the grid goes. I mean, if I was doing video right now, I could show it to you, and this might be like a good example of showing it to you. But, you know, their rating stays consistent. You don't have any mega drops. In fact, I think the biggest drop in the ratings was last week's NXT when we had Gable Steveson's video. We had Electra Lopez versus Thea Hill, Chase University, Tiffany Stratton. There was a couple of angles. It was 763. And then Dana Brooke, Kalani Jordan had a video, and Blair Davenport and Roxanne Perez had a video, and then it dropped down to 699. These weren't even matches. So I don't even really count that for a 50, 60,000 viewership drop. But other than that, they had no big drops in ratings over the last 3 weeks. Now, if you want to know how all the members of Judgment Day fared main eventing NXT, well, I'm going to give it to you right now. And again, you know, with regards to Rhea Ripley, you might want to give her a little bit of a pass, only because, again, she didn't have a week, you know, to have it hyped up. She really just had less than 24 hours because it wasn't made official or even made public until almost midnight Monday night. So Rhea Ripley on NXT yesterday, her match with Lyra Valkyria, she scored 705,000 viewers. Not a bad number, 705. And again, I'm not going to compare it to Collision. You know, I mean, anyone else that wants to have fun with that, go right ahead. But Rhea Ripley versus Lyra Valkyria, 705, can't, you know, criticize that number at all. So she scored the lowest. Just wanted to make that clear. The next on the list was Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams versus Damian Priest and Finn Balor. They had a week to hype up that the Judgment Day was going to be on that show. Yes, they didn't announce that match until the day of, but that match did 715,000 viewers. So Rhea Ripley did 705, Finn Balor and Damian Priest did 715. More importantly, when they had that main event, the rating went up 81,000 viewers. So a lot of people were tuning in just to see that main event. So good there. But overall, just slightly higher than Rhea Ripley. Well, you know, that's why we do breakdowns of ratings, especially on the Monday show where I could recap the whole week, because you start noticing trends. A couple of years ago, we used to notice the trend of the grizzled young veterans, Breezango and others, just nosediving in the ratings in NXT, seeing a 100,000 viewership drop sometimes. And when you see certain individuals, whether you like it or not, even though, you know, I'm rooting for the guy, Bronson Reed has been a ratings, I don't want to say nightmare, but a ratings disappointment, cause of concern over the last month and a half. You know, not every single appearance causes a major decline, but there is a pattern. There is a trend. But we used to notice that. And when we do these ratings every week and I look at the quarter hours, what is something I said on Monday that not one wrestling podcast or a news site is talking about right now? That the WWE women have been dominating the ratings on weekly television, you know, for the most part, not every single show, but I would say at least 3/4 of the shows, they're either the highest rating of the night or they're right there. The women on Raw and SmackDown and even NXT to an extent, they're no longer getting those tremendous drops that we used to talk about. AEW still has that problem. you know, we've talked about it from Willow to Athena and others, unfortunately. And that's not their fault. It's just that fans could tell, you know, how AEW does not invest in the women's division anywhere near the men's division. You know, Chris Statlander. I absolutely love Chris Statlander's work. I have no problem with her being women's champion right now. But her run is turning into Jade Cargill's. She just has matches every week, and then every so often someone else will come out and have a confrontation, and that leads to a match the following week, and then she beats that person, and then it's back to just beating random person, and that happens. And then the week after, it's an interview segment. The week after that, it's another match. And you see, she's champion now for, what, 2 months? Does it feel like she's had any hardcore feuds? You know, it's people could feel it, sense it. So I pay attention to trends. And another person that we've been talking about for at least the last 6 weeks is Dominic Mysterio. I mean, Dominic Mysterio made WWE history last week, main eventing Raw, SmackDown, and NXT in the same week, and they were all title matches. WWE didn't suddenly decide, let's put the Jets behind Dominic Mysterio. They didn't just decide, oh, the crowd is giving him major heel heat, let's just fucking throw him on TV as much as we can. No, they're also noticing ratings. They're noticing no drops, and in many cases, increases. And WWE is capitalizing on it. Yeah, I keep seeing people out there, and I'm baffled why people would even think this. Like, oh, there's overexposure with the Judgment Day on television. What are you talking about? The Bloodline has been all over the place. Why? Because they're rating success, because the crowd is into it, because their merchandise is selling big. Why? Because LA Knight's not on all three shows? You know, the Judgment Day, you know, they appeared on a SmackDown. You know, it's like, are we seeing a Judgment Day every single week on SmackDown? No. But because they get a little extra time the last week and a half, 2 weeks, suddenly it's a problem? God, that's ridiculous. So, without any more suspense, Dominic Mysterio scored the highest of all the members of Judgment Day. Rhea got 705. Damian Priest and Finn Balor got 715. Dominic Mysterio got 844,000. And not only that, the quarter prior to Dominic Mysterio's match on NXT did 699. He had almost 150,000 viewership increase. That is big. That is very big. So he definitely has bragging rights right now. And, you know, I don't know how a lot of you feel presently about Dominic Mysterio, but, you know, I've been singing high praise for him for well over a year. And he's quickly becoming one of my favorites to watch on TV. You know why? Because we're seeing him put it together right before our very eyes. You feel the confidence. You might still consider him a mosquito, annoying. And yes, you want to see him get slapped around and get his ass kicked. You know, he's doing his job, if that's the case. But you see confidence. You see, you know, him putting it together. You see, you know, it's nice to see things develop in front of your very eyes. And that's what we're seeing right now. All right. So we have the Great American Bash this weekend. Right now we have 7 matches announced. One is a pre-show. The pre-show will be the metaphor of Noam Dar, Oro Mensah, Last Legend, and Jakara Jackson. They will be taking on Nathan Frazier, Dragon Lee, Ulysses Leon, and Valentina Feroz. I know everybody and their mother is going with Dragon Lee, Nathan Frazier, Ulysses Leon, Valentina Feroz. Honestly, I am going with the heels. We'll probably see either Last Legend or Jakara Jackson pin Ulysses Leon or Valentina Feroz. Dragon Lee and Nathan Frazier are obviously destined to the main roster. But I think, especially after all the nonsense, the only way I see the babyfaces win is if the fake Heritage Cup that Noam Dar was presented with yesterday, if that gets destroyed, or if Nathan Frazier takes it. You know, if that cup is going to be a non-prop going forward, then I go with the baby faces. But if they're going to keep it where Noam Dar is going to be walking around with a replica Heritage Cup, did you ever think that we would say that? Then I go with them. I'm not liking the storyline. I'm not going to lie to you. I think it's kind of cheesy. And Noam Dar acting like he was in a vegetative state for the last couple of weeks was pretty goofy. And the crowd, you could feel they weren't into it either. Don't, you know, can't fault him for trying. I mean, he is pretty funny if you actually focus on his character. So, Gable Steveson will have his first ever pro wrestling match, televised, I should say, taking on Baron Corbin. Really, it is his first professional wrestling match. I'm going with Gable Steveson. I'm a little surprised that they waited to the go-home show of NXT for the Great American Bash to announce this match. I would have thought you announce it last week or the week before and instill in everybody's mind the fact that Baron Corbin ended the career of another gold medalist. Instead, they did some, like, Fed line yesterday. Did you hear it? Where Baron Corbin looked at Gable Steveson and said, "You're looking at a great white, and right now I smell blood." Oh my God. It felt so manufactured when I heard that. I'm like, oh, that was so not needed. Just, I retired another Olympic gold medalist, and I'm going to put you in retirement before you even had a career. Hype that up for a week or two. I'm going with Gable Steveson to beat Baron Corbin. Tiffany Stratton defending the NXT Women's Championship against Thea Hale. I'm going with Tiffany Stratton. Thea Hale, 19 years old, has nothing to be shamed about. Crowd loves her. I like her work. There's no way, if she won a championship right now, to me it would be on Mikey Whipwreck levels. And that's nothing against Mikey Whipwreck. I like Mikey. Mikey's a good guy. But back in 1995, fans were not digging Mikey Whipwreck as the ECW champion. I would put it on that level. The Chase University stuff is great. We got a little cameo yesterday from Bodie Hayward. They did show an old Chase University segment with Bodie Hayward. Wish that guy would be brought back. Can't believe the guy has not been able to get back in this company. How much money was he making? He wasn't making a lot. They felt that he was not putting in enough effort. Bring the guy back. I would like to see Bodie Hayward back in NXT. Still, though, Tiffany Stratton, Tiffy time remains. She will beat Thea Hale. Now, this is interesting. Gallus defending the NXT tag titles against Tony D'Angelo and Channing Stacks Lorenzo. Listen, I got my personal feelings on Tony D'Angelo. Obviously, there's no jealousy. He's the Don of NXT. I'm the Don of podcast. I'm the real Tony D because I'm older. All right? I like his work. He's trying. This is WWE standards. You can't be over-the-top mafioso on TV. Some of it is very corny. You know, when they did the sit-down with him and Santos Escobar, that was just ridiculous. Remember the background? I honestly thought it was like the stage of the Muppet Show. It's the Muppet Show. Yay! See, I can't do Kermit the Frog unless I, you know, I can't think about it. Hey ho, Kermit the Frog here. You're listening to Wednesday Night Dynamite. Yay! When I was younger and my voice was higher pitched, I used to do a perfect Miss Piggy. Can't do it anymore. Oh, Kermit. Oh, Kermit. Can't do it. Can't do it. I used to do a great Fozzie Bear.
Waka, 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 waka.
I can't get that deep anymore. I don't know why. I used to do Animal. I used to do the old guys. Oh, my God. I used to do so many Muppets. But anyway, I like what they're trying to do with Tony D'Angelo. Remember, he was not a professional wrestler before he came aboard NXT. So everything you've seen him develop. I personally think that it is way too soon to put the tag titles on Tony D'Angelo and Stacks. But I almost feel like with everything that's been going on, there's no future feuds lined up for them. Although I do see possibly Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo as long as they remain as a tag team. And Gallus, I almost feel like Gallus should replace the Viking Raiders on the main roster. I'm going to go with Tony D'Angelo and Stacks to win the tag team championships. Again, I think it's way too soon. Stacks has improved. Remember a year ago, there was a lot of buzz. People that I talked to, that Stacks had to up his game a little bit, otherwise he was going to be sleeping with the fishes too. There was a lot of concern a year ago about Stacks' future in NXT. Remember, you know, for a lot of people on that roster, they get 6 months to a year to show what they got. And unless there's something uber special about them and they see substantial progress, they will cut. But he has definitely improved, and Tony D'Angelo has gotten better. His character is more solid. And it's NXT, and I'm not saying that in a negative thing, but it's NXT. It's developmental. It's not the end of the world if somebody wins a championship that you might feel shouldn't win it. It's developmental. So Gallus, to me, is on a different level. But I get a feeling Tony D'Angelo and Stacks are going to win. I wonder if we're going to get a surprise appearance by somebody. I don't know who. Maybe somebody makes an appearance and helps Tony D'Angelo and Stacks win. I don't know. Just a feeling. Just a feeling. Dominic Mysterio defending the NXT North American Championship against Mustafa Ali and Wes Lee. Originally, this was Mustafa Ali taking on Wes Lee, but Dominic won the championship. On NXT yesterday, we had some fun back and forths between Dominic, Ali, and Wes Lee. Mustafa Ali and Wes Lee are quote unquote friends, as far, you know, behind the scenes and TV. But it was funny because Mustafa Ali was like, "Look, I have nothing against you, Wes Lee," and you know, he was mad at Dominic, you know, for cutting in line and winning the championship. But Mustafa Ali slipped up yesterday and he said, "This clown lost the title." And the crowd was like, "What? What did he just say?" And Wes Lee got into his face. And it was good. It was good. But Mustafa Ali calling Wes Lee a clown, I thought that was fucking great. And Dominic is eating it up. He's like, "I'll let you two, you know, take care of your business." And Dominic gets out of Dodge before he gets his ass kicked. But the bottom line is, this is now a three-way. I think you have Dominic Mysterio retain. I think Dominic squeaks out a victory. Rhea Ripley is supposed to be in his corner. I could see Wes Lee having the match won, going to pin Mustafa Ali, and then something happens and Dominic steals the pin. Right now, you know, Dominic's getting extra exposure. He's working the schedule. Crowd is into it. He's improving. I don't think you have to rock that ship, rock that boat so soon. I say Dominic Mysterio retains with help from Rhea Ripley. Roxanne Perez versus Blair Davenport in a Weapons Wild match. This feud has been interesting. I mean, Roxanne Perez, I'm still confused. Like, what transpired from a few weeks before WrestleMania, you know, and Stand and Deliver. You know, she was on top champion. I just, maybe she, you know, look, there's been buzz that mentally, like, she wasn't ready for that, you know, that position. And NXT also felt that maybe we, you know, pushed that button too soon and they took the title off of her. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know truly why they did what they did. But the funny thing is, they did the whole injury storyline and people online believed it. And Roxanne Perez, give her credit, because I don't know if you noticed it in real time, but it's a big deal. Give her credit. She had some of her deepest hardcore fans younger fans, little girls, you know, like really worried about her with her quote unquote injury. And you could sense that, wow, Roxanne Perez, she can't tell these people, wink, wink, I'm going to be fine. If you know what I mean, like she had to play along with the storyline. And then you had some people like she wouldn't lie to her fans. How many times did you see that back in March? She wouldn't lie to her fans. And that's really, really tempting to want to make a response, but you can't. I mean, it's not the same, but when I think of stuff like that, I think back to Jack Swagger and Dutch Mantel, Zeb Coulter. When they were getting pressure and they had, you know, they were doing the illegal alien stuff and We the People. And then you started getting like outside politicians like really, really upset at what Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter were doing. And they did that recorded video. I'm Jake Hager. I'm Dutch Mantel. And we're just playing characters on TV. I fucking hated that. To me, that's almost, if not, you know, maybe worse than Hacksaw Jim Duggan in the Eye and Cheek. Because at least they didn't admit it at the time in 87 when they got pulled over on the highway. These people are literally telling you that they're actors. Of course us wrestling fans know that. Of course the outside world knows that too. But, you know, why? Just to appease Glenn Beck and others? That was just ridiculous. You're an entertainer. You're a sports entertainer. You're an actor, an actress. Maybe not in the Hollywood sense, even though some people think that Jey Uso deserves an Emmy. Some type of mainstream award, and I agree. But still, you are an entertainer at the end of the day. And if people think ethically that you wouldn't lie, you're an entertainer. And she resisted, and I give her credit for that. I think she beats Blair Davenport. I think she gets her revenge on Blair Davenport. I think Blair Davenport does not need a win right now. I think Roxanne Perez, especially with her size, I think she, you know, when you see Roxanne Perez get mad, sometimes it's a hard sell because, you know, she's such a good person. I'm not saying that Blair Davenport is not, but Blair Davenport really does her evilness well. I think she is destined for the main roster. She's got something. I honestly think Blair Davenport is further in development than Alba Fyre. Alba Fyre, as a singles wrestler, did not like it at all. Her teaming up with Isla Dawn is what changed Alba Fyre. Blair Davenport has it, and I think she will get promoted to the main roster. By this time next year, I think she's on the main roster. But she loses this weekend. And that leaves us, Carmelo Hayes, defending the NXT Championship against Ilya Dragunov. There's got to be some controversy here. Carmelo Hayes is going to retain this championship. I don't know what's next for Ilya Dragunov. I'm a little bit pissed off that Bron Breakker is not on this card. He was featured on the promo posters, and who knows, we may get an impromptu match. Maybe Bron Breakker comes out there. That nobody stepped up, or he, you know, he wants a issues a challenge. Maybe Von Wagner comes out. I don't know where you go from here with Ilya Dragunov and the NXT roster, unless they put him in a tag team with someone. And I still feel that Dijak and Ilya would have been a great tag team in NXT. After their match that they had, I could have seen them with that respect towards each other for putting each other through that brutality. I think them aligning would have been pretty fucking good, but it's not in the cards. Ilya Dragunov, I don't know where they go from here. You know, a lot of people still think that JD McDonagh will join Imperium when Giovanni Vinci gets kicked out. I'm sorry, man. Like, JD McDonagh does not flow off the tongue as a member of Imperium. Ilya Dragunov does, but Ilya Dragunov is so good as a babyface, though. The sympathy that that guy gets when he gets beat up, there's very, 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 very few wrestlers out there that can do that. Try to come up with five to get that kind of sympathy, the facials, though you really believe that he is hurting. You know, you might have a hard time coming up with five. But after this, where do you go with Carmelo Hayes? I think that's an even bigger problem than Ilya. Because Ilya, they can have him feud with Braun. They want to go there again. They could have him feud with a few people on that roster. They could revisit Dijak if they wanted to. Carmelo Hayes, though, like, who is going to be not just a feud, not just a title match in the future, but something that's going to get people to want to tune in? Trick Williams turning on Carmelo Hayes is the money feud. I don't know if it happens this soon. I could see it happening, or maybe it makes more sense for it to happen towards Stand and Deliver of next year. But next year is an awful long time from now. And I don't know how you could extend Carmelo Hayes' championship reign into Stand and Deliver 2024, and we're having a hard time predicting his next big feud. You know, you look on the main roster, you look at, you know, I mean, Roman Reigns, obviously, the position that he's in, it's much more difficult. But, you know, you look at Gunther, or you look at Austin Theory, we could come up with a decent number of people that they could feud with. I know everybody wants LA Knight, so do I. But the point is, even with Seth Rollins, there's several people you could have Seth Rollins feud against. But with Carmelo Hayes, who stands out is the match that gets everybody talking. For me, outside of a revisit of Braun, or maybe a rematch with Ilya, or maybe a three-way, or maybe you incorporate Dijak somehow, which I don't know if is going to happen, it's Trick Williams. I think that's where this is going to go in the very near future. And listen, I look, if it happens, yeah, I could sit here and brag and say, yeah, I was the first one to see that, call it, expect it. Doesn't mean that I want it, though. I do not want to see Trick Williams feud with Carmelo Hayes, but it might be necessary because Carmelo Hayes is stuck in the mud right now, even though a lot of people refuse to admit that. So here's another thing, too. I wonder if Brian Pillman Jr. makes an appearance at the Great American Bash. Remember, he is no longer with AEW. He has shown up at the Performance Center a couple of times. He's met with WWE, and WWE absolutely think that Brian Pillman Jr. has a future, a big future in wrestling, and they want to give him the shot. And I expect him to sign. NXT, starting off in NXT, is not a demotion. Who knows? Maybe Brian Pillman Jr. and Carmelo Hayes in the next feud. That could be. That could absolutely be. If you're not going to do Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes in the next month or two, maybe Brian Pillman Jr. shows up. Maybe he shows up. So let's look out for that this weekend. Speaking of Brian Pillman Jr., I don't want to spend much time on this, but something that I wanted to share, because it's something that I've pointed out before, and it's really, like, cheesy, and the fluff is just ridiculous. And you almost feel like you're dealing with children. But, you know, Roosh, his contract recently was up with AEW. And you had Dave Meltzer about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, post that WWE would be is interested in Roosh, in signing Roosh. And you might remember about 2 weeks ago, I talked about a little pattern that I'm noticing with people out there that want to, like, put AEW instead of just giving the props that it deserves, they always got to inflate it and make it seem bigger. You know, like I watch people say, oh, AEW was number two for the night in the ratings. And then you look and they're basing it on an 18 to 49, even though there was 10 other shows that did twice the number of viewers. Like who comes up with that you have to use that metric? Because they think the business world follows that. I brought up not too long ago, what was it? It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That motherfucking show was in the top five of ratings for the whole night because of the 18 to 49 demographic, and their overall viewership was 279,000 viewers. Meanwhile, you had shows that did 10 times the viewers. And I don't watch Fox News anymore, but I remember bringing it up. Hannity had 2.4 million viewers that night. Hannity was ranked 18th for the night, but a show that didn't even get 300,000 viewers, you're actually going to tell me that that show was ranked number three or number four? I mean, what bizarro planet are we living in? But I noticed a pattern that there's people out there that want, that they think it makes AEW look better, that wrestlers are choosing AEW over WWE. And if you remember Jay White, we knew Jay White was working out a deal with AEW. WWE was not interested in Jay White right now because Jay White would not move the needle. They have so many people in the main picture. Jay White isn't going to just sneak in there just because he's got this cult following in New Japan. This is not like AJ Styles from 8 years ago. It is a totally different time. So they put this out there that, oh, WWE is interested in Jay White. And then within a week, Jay White chooses AEW over WWE. Triple H, Bruce Pritchard, Vince McMahon, Nick Khan, they ain't going to go public and say, we never were going to sign Jay White. But people put it out there. And they did it multiple times. Aussie Open. WWE had no fucking interest in bringing an Aussie Open right now. For what? Where are they going to fit in? You know, to feud with Bronco Nima and Lucian Price? So what happens? Oh, WWE's interested. You notice how they use WWE. They don't ever mention individual people. Yeah, I'm sure there's some WWE wrestlers, Finn Balor, AJ Styles, and others, would have loved to have Jay White in that company. Why not? Jay White is talented. Jay White could go. But as far as WWE mainstream management, there's no need. They have no interest in Aussie Open right now. But you get a journalist out there that say, oh, WWE is interested in Aussie Open. And then what happens a week later? Aussie Open chose AEW over WWE. And I joked 2 weeks ago and I said, watch, they're going to do it with Roosh. And sure enough, 2 weeks ago, go back and look at the newswire, July 11th, July 12th, that Roosh, his contract is expired with WWE. And he has yet to re-sign with AEW. So they put out there that WWE's interested in Roosh. And then 2 weeks later, there's a video of Roosh signing the contract and hugging Tony Khan. And you get all these butt plugs out there that are like, oh, Roosh, FTR, Aussie Open, Jay White, they all chose AEW over WWE. And meanwhile, WWE had really no interest in bringing these guys in, unless they get them on the cheap. If they were going to bring in Roosh, they were going to give him NXT money like they did in Dragon Lee. And Roosh, in my opinion, is too good for NXT. But here's where you could tell that these people are doing this shit on purpose. When Brian Pillman Jr.'s contract expired, you never saw any of these fluffsters out there. I think we'd have to start calling them fluffsters. Say that fast 10 times. Any of these fluffs out there, you didn't see any of them write that Brian Pillman's contract with AEW expired and he is yet to re-sign. No, they wrote from Mike Johnson, to Dave Meltzer, to everyone else, his contract was not renewed by AEW. It's funny. When it comes to Brian Pillman Jr., they knew point blank specific that AEW was not re-signing him. But when it comes to the others, oh, WWE has interest. Oh, WWE has interest. AEW is interested. And the wrestler is weighing out their options. And then a week or two later, they choose AEW. There was never a doubt. Especially when you're talking about that kind of money for multiple years. These decisions don't suddenly abruptly get done within 14 days like they always do. If you look at everybody that they have played that game with, it's always within a 14-day span. They put it out there that WWE is interested. Meanwhile, the person is signing with AEW, and then a week or two later, oh, the person chose AEW over WWE, blah, 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 blah. But with Brian Pillman Jr., they never worded it that way. They worded it that his contract expired, and it was not renewed by the company. Why wouldn't they have said originally, Roosh's contract expired and was not renewed by the company? That doesn't mean he can't resign. Pay attention to those words, because they use different words when they want to manufacture this perception that wrestlers, that WWE is contacting wrestlers and saying, we want you. We want you. We could see you as a main eventer. We could see you at WrestleMania. Let me think about it. And then 2 weeks later, no, thank you. I'm going to resign with AEW. That's not happening. It is not happening. And notice how none of these wrestlers are revealing that that's happened. Notice how they'll just say, oh, I'm happy to be with AEW. Just because a wrestler might be interested in going to WWE doesn't mean that WWE is interested in bringing them in. Remember that. No matter how good they are. No matter how good they are. So, talk about two, three more things. I'll give you AEW results in a couple of moments. Dave Meltzer made an appearance on Chris Van Vliet's Fleet. I got to get used to it. Chris Van Vliet's podcast. And the big buzz was their extended conversation about Dave Meltzer's rating system. Now, I have since heard that Dave Meltzer has gone on his message board, which is behind a paywall, and said that he hated the interview, that he almost found it ridiculous that they were arguing over quarter star ratings. I kind of agree. But at the same time, though, you know, there is obviously this blatant favoritism towards AEW than a lot of other wrestlers out there. A lot of other wrestlers, you know, and the thing that got me with this discussion that Vliet had with Dave Meltzer was where Dave Meltzer said that when he bases his ratings, one big thing is when he expects, it's almost like what Roddy Piper used to say, just when they think they got the answers, I change the questions. It's like, okay, Dave Meltzer is expecting something to go one way, and when it goes a different way, oh, let me give it a little bit extra points for that because it was unexpected. Listen, this is my honest opinion about Dave Meltzer's rating system. I have brought this up many times over the years, but after listening to Vliet and Meltzer talk about this match got 4, Kurt Angle never got 5, and this, and that. You know, at the end of the day, this is my feelings about Dave Meltzer's ratings. And I'm being 100% sincere when I say this. What is the name of Dave Meltzer's newsletter? It is called The Observer. Observer. He observes. He critiques. He gives his rating. He prefers AEW Japanese wrestling over others. He thinks it's a little better. Who are we? And I'm not defending him. I'm just telling you my honest opinions on this. Who are we to tell him what he should like and not like? movie critics. I know Vliet brought up movie critics, but this is what it comes down to. There are some movie critics out there that hate lighthearted comedies. Unless it's like Big or one of the, you know, these special, you know, Groundhog Day. You know, like, unless it's like a really special, you know, gets to your heart, pulls at your strings. You know, they're not really into it. But give me a nice drama film and I'll give it 5 stars, 10 stars, 2 thumbs up, 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. It's all about point of view. Dave Meltzer gives his opinion on how he feels about a match. When he gives it 5 stars, it's his way of telling the wrestling world, y'all got to see this match. When he gives it 6 stars and 7 stars and 95 stars, guys, stop what you're fucking doing right now and you got to watch this match. It is epic, unbelievable. You won't be able to go to sleep tonight. That's how I look at it. He is one movie critic. If people out there don't like his opinions, who forces you to pay attention to them? You know, I remember growing up, we had 2 movie critics, Siskel and Ebert. But you go into, and you know what? I can't believe that I'm doing this live on the show. But I'm typing in right now, movie critics, Daily News, New York Daily News. And I'm going to actually add the word legendary after it. All right. And when you go on film critics, let's see. Let me take the New York Daily News out of this. Legendary movie critics. Okay. Roger Ebert. Let me see if any of these names. Leonard Maltin. I'm sure a lot of people remember Leonard Maltin. Wow, a lot of these people, I don't recognize their names. You know, you got Siskel. You got, oh, Gene Shalit. A lot of people remember Gene Shalit. He used to have that gigantic mustache. Judith Crist. My point is that you had tons of movie critics out there. But for me, whenever I watch TV, I would always see Siskel and Ebert, Siskel and Ebert, Siskel and Ebert. And sometimes when they would say a movie sucked, I would want to see it more because I knew that their style of what they liked is not what I liked. But if I didn't want to pay attention to their movie ratings, I wouldn't. You know, I would just follow somebody else. So if people out there find Dave Meltzer's ratings stupid, why do you care? He observes. That's the name of his newsletter, The Wrestling Observer. He is a one-man critic. And Seth Rollins recently was asked about the match ratings that Meltzer does by Logan Paul, and Seth Rollins calls the match ratings silly. You know, and when Dave Meltzer, I honestly think, did back himself up a little bit when he spoke with Chris, but he could have answered Chris's question in 30 seconds. Look, I'm giving an opinion about a match. I'm giving an opinion on what I like, what I think others would like, and what I think others would really, really like. That's it. That's it. If he's a little biased, if I was a food critic, guys, if I was a food critic, I would not be able to help but maybe favor Italian food a little bit more, or Latino food a little bit more, or Mexican food a little bit more, or even Chinese food a little bit more. But seafood, I don't like seafood for the most part. So I might taste something that tastes really good, but if I'm not a big fan of it, I might actually find some flaws in it that someone else who is a fan of seafood that wouldn't. So to me, you know, Dave Meltzer's rating system, it's an opinion of a guy who's been writing about wrestling for decades upon decades, going back to the 70s, and he observes and he gives his reviews and critiques. And we don't have to follow him. We don't have to pay attention to him. And anyone out there that can't stand Meltzer and can't stand his ratings and always keep complaining about it, then, you know, in my opinion, is part of the blame. Ignore the guy. Go find someone out there that you feel is a little bit fairer with their ratings. And if there aren't anyone else out there, why aren't they? Why aren't other podcasters giving their rating system? Why aren't people asking other journalists out there, what do you give this match? You know, what do you give this match? Why don't you give a rating or something and see how the person answers? You know, if other people are not going to step up and start doing what Dave Meltzer does, then Dave Meltzer will be the big game in town. You know, that's the thing, you know, like if you look at The Torch or you look at PW Insider, you look at Fightful, and I'm not criticizing those three right now. I'm just making a point. Like if they felt that match ratings were very, very important, I think on a more consistent level, they would start putting out their ratings. And then if people find them more fair, you know, and think that they have merit, then you will see people out there gravitate towards someone else. Hey, you know, Bill Apter, what did you think about this match? How would you have rated it? You know, I almost feel like people are afraid to go up against Dave Meltzer's rating system. Guys, watching wrestling is a matter of opinion. A match that I absolutely loved, someone else could have hated. You know, when I grew up as a kid, Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan was a very, very important match for me as a fan. I was invested in the storyline. I watched the match many, many times, a lot when I was a kid. I liked the match. I thought it told a wonderful story. And if anybody remembers my hotline days, we used to have a guy on there called Dave the Genetic Freak. He was on for about maybe 6 months with us. Not every show, but he would make appearances. And he called Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant one of the worst matches he's ever seen because he was basing it solely on work rate. He was obviously too young. He wasn't around when the storyline happened. So there wasn't that emotional investment in it. You know, so it's one of the most important, biggest matches in history, not necessarily because of in-ring, quality that night. It told a story. It was much bigger than that. But someone who is not necessarily favoring storyline and just wants to see athletic prowess, they may give a match a higher rating than others. So until other people want to step up, offer their opinions, and have people gravitate to those opinions, Dave Meltzer will remain the loudest voice out there. That's it. I'm not saying this to be pro-Dave or anti-Dave, but his name of his newsletter tells it all. Observer. He observes. And I don't know why it's so confusing for so many people out there. Kota Ibushi posted a statement. There was quite a few complaints about his performance in Blood and Guts. I really didn't have any issue with his in-ring work, only because I'm not a big fan of his work. It's not that he's not extremely talented. It's not that he's not a star and one of the biggest stars in Japan in this era. But, you know, I didn't gravitate and, like, focus only on his work in that match. But now because there was people complaining about his in-ring work, I went back and I watched him a little bit closer. And I noticed that, you know, he was not taking as much of the hardcore bumps. And yes, him falling on the thumbtacks after the cameras ended, I thought was just dumb. Some people were comparing it to old school Sabu when he used to put himself through tables early in his career. There was a big difference. There was a big difference. And if any of you out there saw any moron saying that, and if any of you said it, I don't mean it personal. You're not a moron. But the difference between what Kota Ibushi did Wednesday, putting himself through thumbtacks and Sabu, is that when Sabu dove and put himself through the table, he was grimacing in pain. He was writhing in pain. And, you know, people are like, why is this guy doing this to himself? He was in excruciating pain and selling it, but he liked it. Kota Ibushi put himself through the thumbtacks and no-sold them. He got up and was like waiting for a round of applause from the fans. And I thought that was kind of stupid. But as far as his performance from Wednesday, he said this, and it's interesting. Ibushi said, and I quote, "I'm home. It's my fault that I didn't know thumbtacks and glass after all this time. I have thin wrestling shoes, so it penetrated and it was just painful from the middle. And I ended up moving around like an old man. I am sorry. Far from unable to kick, both ankles were stiff. Life with a cane for the first time in my life. No, I'll be cured tomorrow." That is Kota Ibushi. I'm a little surprised that he was not prepared for, you know, the props that were going to be used in this match. What I find more interesting is that I thought he signed a deal with AEW. I mean, I looked online and, you know, I see both sides. I see some people claiming that he did sign a deal. I see some people claiming that he didn't sign a deal. I see that he's all elite. I don't. Why is he already back in Japan? You know, that was the thing that stood out to me more than anything of Ibushi's statement. Like, if he signed with AEW, why is he back in Japan already? Like, that's it? Blood and guts? And, you know, to be continued 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now? I would expect a little more, to be honest with you. Just saying. AEW Dynamite tonight taking place at the MVP Arena in Albany, New York. And even though they're in Albany, Houston, we have a problem. It's a problem I've talked about before. Unfortunately, it never seems to gain much traction. Online, the biggest supporters of AEW, they have the loudest voice that are a little extreme with their support and will make excuses, but don't like to critique and offer solutions, if you notice. They never bring up this problem either. And it's something that happens almost every week, but usually on a small scale, so people don't think much of it. Today, it happened in a much larger scale that left a lot of people online confused. Now, I'm going to tell you what happened, but it's a big problem that AEW really needs to address, especially now with the you know, with Collision being on the map. And I'll say it like this, and I know I won't confuse anyone when I tell you what went down tonight. I'll explain it as simple as I can, but I want to open up by saying this. I don't expect any of you to watch every minute of every hour of WWE programming that airs during the week. I don't expect you to watch every minute of AEW programming that airs during the week. Even my podcasts. Over the last 7 months, one of the things that I have intentionally tried to do with my podcast is that each night of the week, the theme is different. Mondays, it's Raw. Any weekend news that needs to be brought up, ratings, history, that's it. On Tuesdays, we do Patreon. Wednesdays, it is NXT, AEW, Impact Wrestling, Indie Wrestling, New Japan if needed, everything but WWE. On Saturday, we do kind of this week in news discussion. We'll get into anything else that transpired during the week. And then Sundays, it's interactive with Q&A. But one of the things that I will do is that if I talk about a topic earlier in the week and then more news comes out, I will bring up what I talked about early in the week. Last week, I'll give you a great example, Bayley's injury. On the Don Tony show, not this past Saturday, the Saturday before, I talked about Bayley. Actually, it was Monday's Raw recap. I talked about Bayley in a three-way over the weekend, tweaked her knee, and she was carried out. People were very, very worried that she blew out her knee. So when we talked about it on that Monday, which was only a day and a half afterwards, people were still unsure if she was going to be okay or not. A day or two later, video surfaced that she was fine. She had a little bit of a strain. She had an MRI just to play it safe. It doesn't appear anything was torn. She'll be fine in a couple of weeks. So I updated that story a few days later. With WWE, Dominic Mysterio might be a great example. If Dominic Mysterio is going to do something on NXT, WWE will give a recap of what has led up to what transpired in NXT. If Dominic Mysterio is going to be on SmackDown as the North American champion, WWE shows footage of what happened with Dominic Mysterio for the NXT and the Raw prior, so you understand why we're at where we're at. When it comes to AEW, they just assume that everybody watches everything, including Ring of Honor. This past weekend on AEW television, there was an incident where Orange Cassidy was going to nail Wheeler Yuta with the orange punch. Wheeler Yuta moved out of the way, and Orange Cassidy nailed Claudio Castagnoli instead. Keep that on the brain. Tonight on AEW Dynamite, Orange Cassidy successfully defended the international title against AR Fox. Now, AR Fox, after the match is over, attacks Orange Cassidy because Orange Cassidy tried to put the sunglasses on him and he didn't like it. He was pissed off, so he nails Orange Cassidy. Darby Allin, who was friends with Orange Cassidy and AR Fox, was questioning why AR Fox did that to Orange Cassidy. And AR Fox later on would level Darby Allin and join the Mogul Associates, the embassy, whatever you want to call them. All right. That has nothing to do with what I'm about to say, though. I just wanted to set this up. After AR Fox attacks Orange Cassidy, here comes John Moxley out of nowhere and takes out Orange Cassidy with a Death Rider, leaves him laying. And social media, quite a few, a large portion is, why did John Moxley do this? Like, is that what they're setting up now? A John Moxley Orange Cassidy feud out of nowhere? Why would he come out through the rafters and level Orange Cassidy the way they did? So most people online don't know that this weekend Orange Cassidy inadvertently hit Claudio. Claudio is Moxley's tag boy. So this is something that they do repeatedly. We have seen things happen on Ring of Honor pay-per-views. And then something happens on Dynamite, and you're saying to yourself, why is this happening? And then, you know, you go on the net, and then you hear, oh, well, that's because so-and-so did this to so-and-so at Death Before Dishonor. Oh, because Rampage, this happened. They don't show any recap footage to open the show so people understand. Like, Ring of Honor's pay-per-view, this was this past weekend. Just for example, I want to just say it like that. So even if, you know, this is not Ring of Honor, we're watching on TV, if you're going to bleed over certain things that happen in Ring of Honor, then you got to show a little video montage at the beginning of the show. AEW Collision. You know, obviously FTR is going to be defending the tag titles this coming Saturday against Adam Cole and MJF. So we see video that will lead into Collision, or it'll lead into tonight's Dynamite, so you're up to date. But for a lot of storylines, they'll just in passing act as if everybody knows what transpired. That's why so many of these matches, you know, don't have the interest that they should, or people are left confused. Plus, a lot of this stuff is so fucking random. Let's be honest. You know, I'm not saying that Britt Baker versus Taya Valkyrie is not, you know, a fun match that we would not be looking forward to, of course. But you get Taya Valkyrie, you know, on a Rampage or on a Collision. She has a match, and then she gets on the mic and she calls out Britt Baker, and the next thing you know, there's a match on Dynamite. I guarantee you, after AR Fox did what he did, turn it on Darby Allin, we'll probably have a match with Darby Allin next. Now, if you don't watch every single show, you don't know why there's a chain of events. And AEW has a habit of just assuming that we watched Collision, that we watched Rampage, that we watched Ring of Honor. And look at the ratings. Rampage doesn't even get 400,000 viewers at times, or barely breaks 400,000. You know, plus, you don't know how much of that audience did not watch Dynamite from early in the week. These could be WWE fans that wanted to check out Rampage and turn the channel from SmackDown after they went off the air. So AEW's really got to tighten that shit up. That is one of the biggest problems with that company. And they really need to start separating these shows. If they're going to bleed something from Rampage into Dynamite, if they're going to have something take place from Dynamite bleed into Collision, if they're going to have something from Collision bleed into Dynamite, you need to air recaps at the beginning of the show. This way, people are up to date. You can't just assume that people watched. Plus, if you bring people up to date and it looks halfway cool of the recap that they're watching, then maybe they will tune into the other show. I like it when Raw will show some highlights from SmackDown. It keeps me up to date in case I missed SmackDown. You cannot assume that a fan saw everything. And AEW does that too often. I like the recaps. Some people find the recaps annoying. I have people every week that say, man, I'm sick of all these SmackDown recaps on Raw. It is necessary. It is necessary for those out there that may not have seen, and especially this past week, them being on FS1, they only had 1.2 million or 1 million. So there was another million fans that did not watch SmackDown live. They may have watched it online over the weekend. We cannot assume that they did. So AEW needs to do a better job of recapping things that happen on other shows that will affect the show that you're watching on a given night, for example, tonight. But the AR Fox stuff is a totally different thing, obviously. You know, I don't know how much interest that's going to garner. I mean, AR Fox, you know, he's a good guy, trainer, very well respected. But, you know, is he a big ratings draw? You know, maybe not. Definitely not. But, hey, maybe they could turn something into it. You know, he's one of their, you know, main guys, and he helps behind the scenes, so they want to give him some time. He could also be, you know, the piece that segues into other people feuding. Hence, what happened with Moxley tonight and Orange Cassidy. And remember, the main event, you have Claudio and Moxley in a three-way tag match against the Best Friends and the Lucha Bros. So obviously, Moxley interacting with the Best Friends will lead into the Orange Cassidy stuff, and then we see where it goes from here. Who knows? Maybe Jon Moxley will be the one to dethrone Orange Cassidy for the International Championship in the near future. So, before I give you the quick results from Dynamite, I did want to mention one thing about Collision's rating this week. Monday on the Raw post show, we didn't have Collision's rating. Collision usually comes out on a Wednesday. The rating for July 22nd did 618,000 viewers, slightly up from last week's 579. And it seems that 600,000 now is the median of what Collision is going to be. On special nights, on a special match, an important match, for example, this coming weekend, Adam Cole, MJF versus FTR, that should garner another 100,000 viewers, I would think, at minimum. But on special nights, that rating should improve. But I think 600,000 is about the median where we should go from here. I think that's a disappointing number. I think 600,000 on a Saturday night, yeah, it's going to be less than a Wednesday because it's the weekend, but 600,000 when you have, you know, more of, you know, pro wrestling, even though it is a version of Dynamite, no question. If they're going to stay around 600,000 and not start falling into Rampage territory, it's okay. It's nothing to brag about. What angers me about the 600,000 number is things like what Meltzer has done. And look, I have a lot of respect for Dave Meltzer. I will always be appreciative of what he had done for some of the causes I've done in the past. I still subscribe. You know, I don't have to agree with everything that he says. I disagree with a lot of it, but I still have a lot of respect for the guy. I will criticize him when needed. But I hate when excuses are made. He's not the only one. Cultaholic does it. You know, they're just another one. And what I mean by that is this. Now, we're not going to talk about All In and stuff like that. Because remember, back, you know, Dave Meltzer said that 30,000 or 35,000 would be considered a success. You know, you set the bar low, so when it goes more, it seems like they're overperforming. And that's one of the things when I said earlier about some of these loud voices online that have this extreme support for AEW and, you know, really just won't address obvious problems. Cultaholic now is now reporting today. If you think I'm making it up, go on their website, look up an article written by Aiden Gibbons. I don't know who the Aiden Gibbons is, but I just want to mention this. They bring up Collision's rating of 618,000, and they write this line, which is bullshit. It is 100% bullshit, because this line was not manufactured by the fluffsters online until a month and a half in with Collision to start getting a feel of what the rating is going to settle in with. This Matarazzo writes, and I quote, viewership hovered between 556 and 620,000 viewers. Reports have indicated that Warner Brothers Discovery hopes to draw between, check this out, 550 to 600,000 viewers and around a 0.21 demo rating. So as long as Collision is between 550 and 600,000 viewers and 0.21 in the 18 to 49 demographic, that's in line of what Warner Brothers Discovery hoped. My friends, for the 2 months leading into Collision's debut, for the 2-3 weeks after CM Punk was confirmed for Collision, going into that weekend, do you remember anybody out there saying that, oh, Warner Brothers Discovery, you know, they're hoping to get around 550 to 600,000 viewers? Bullshit. They ain't nobody in Warner Brothers Discovery. That is a manufactured line by people out there. And it's the same people that said, oh, there was going to be a $2 billion deal at the upfronts in New York City. And I'm not saying it to brag. We were the only people online outside of Fightful that said from day one that there was no TV deal that was going to be made at the upfronts, because the upfronts is not the place where they do TV deals. And whatever happened with that? Remember 5 years at $2 billion? These people try to guess what these networks want. And in Dave Meltzer, because this originated with Dave Meltzer, by the way, in Dave Meltzer's opinion, that if the demo's around 0.20, Warner would be happy. If they get 550 to 600,000 viewers, Warner would be happy. Based on who? Ask him who at Warner Brothers Discovery is fine with that number. Let's see if people will put out names. Put names behind that. Oh, my sources tell me? So this is designed that now, because Collision is settling around 600,000 viewers, now, oh, well, they were expecting 550. So if they get 600,000, wow, they're overperforming. Just like if they drew 35,000 at All In, it would be considered a success. 35,000 at All In would have been a pathetic number. And 600,000 viewers for the caliber of talent and CM Punk and others, I don't care it's Saturday night. Remember, Friday night is the worst night of the week to watch TV. It is the least number of viewers on a Friday night. Not Saturday, Friday. Sunday is the biggest night for viewers. Traditionally. And it still is. So if people want to watch, they will watch. There are TV shows on a Saturday night that draw 2 million viewers. I'm not saying pro wrestling should even draw 1 million viewers. All I'm saying is that this 550 to 600,000 number is a number being thrown out there because people are starting to realize that 600,000 is going to be about the median average for collision. On some weeks where the matches may be a little bit meh, then you might see it go into the fives. You hype up something a little bit extra, you may see it go into the sevens. If you put on a decent card, you may get the sixes. So as long as it stays around that range, everything is okay. And that sucks. Not necessarily number. That sucks to have that mindset. To always make something seem that it is good. Instead of, you know what? You should not want to settle for that. Even add the line. Even though Warner Brothers Discovery would be happy with 600,000, AEW is not. Tony Khan is not. CM Punk is not. The wrestlers are not. No one in AEW wants to settle on that. No. You don't ever hear that. And that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. So they scored 618,000. It seems like 600,000 is where it's settling in. And honestly, I think that is a disappointing rating. I think it's on the low end. I think it's on the low end. I mean, if Dynamite could get, you know, 900, a million, 850, there's no reason why Dynamite or Collision, Saturday Night Dynamite, but Collision doesn't get sevens to eights. It's not out of the question. And believe me when I tell you, if you go back to before Collision debuted, you will find none of these experts saying that 600,000 would be a decent number. That, yeah, if they average around 600,000, you know, that would be a pretty good number. No. They're only saying that now because they see where it's settling in. So, AEW Dynamite results from tonight. As I said earlier, Orange Cassidy retains the International Championship, beating AR Fox. We had a manufactured segment that I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, I don't mind seeing legends from yesteryear having a match, but talk about an Acme Insta-feud. Jack Perry comes out, talks about winning the FTW Championship. You know, when he said earlier this year that he was looking to win gold in 2023, he didn't have the FTW Championship in mind. Then he starts running down ECW indirectly, saying that the FTW title was created in a secondary company, a second class company. This brings out Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn running the bad mouth to Jack Perry, telling him to, you know, be careful. We paved the way for the next generation, that if he's not careful, he's going to get his ass kicked. So we might have Jack Perry versus Jerry Lynn next week. All right. Jerry Lynn's still in great shape. So, you know, let's see. Let's see what happens. Pac over Gravity, which we had some fun with on Monday's show because, you know, Pac defeating Gravity. Isn't that his old catchphrase in WWE, the man that Gravity forgot? Then we used to joke and say the man that Creator forgot. Remember that? Neville, the man that Creator forgot. MJF, Adam Cole, previewing their match on Collision. And, you know, they're basically putting each other over. And MJF saying that regardless, win, lose, or draw on Saturday, that Adam Cole will be getting a rematch for the AEW Championship. Roderick Strong shows up and gets into an argument with MJF. Adam Cole, you know, basically trying to calm things down, but kind of teasing like he's going to take the side of MJF over his buddy, Roderick Strong. Now, keep in mind, All In is and All Out are only a month away. We have nothing yet. Zero. Now, I personally think by next week's Dynamite, we'll start getting matches pretty much squared away for those two upcoming events. I just don't want, simply because they already sold 60-plus thousand tickets, that they're just going to throw matches out there 2 weeks before the card, and everybody's supposed to be like, oh, this is awesome, epic, amazing, unbelievable. You know, we don't have anything announced as of yet. That's why, like I said, you know, much to the dismay of a lot of people out there, MJF will be turning on Adam Cole. It's happening. As much as people love the comedy, as much as people think that they gel beautifully, you know, MJF is the devil. And you cannot change that simply because you got some lighthearted entertainment moments, you know, taking place every week. Adam Cole saying that MJF is becoming one of his best friends. You know, people, in storyline purposes, are buying into that. And to me, it's like one of the most ridiculous things to even think about. And Adam Cole should not be playing off as being that gullible. And you know MJF is going to turn on that motherfucker. So FTR then gets into a little verbal confrontation that they are going to defeat MJF and Adam Cole on Saturday. We had Swerve Strickland defeating Darby Allin. And as I said earlier, you know, AR Fox ends up joining the Mogul Assembly and, you know, attacks Darby Allin. Nick Wayne was with Darby Allin as well. He gets attacked, you know, getting a little bit of additional TV time, which is good. Him being like the protege of Darby Allin, I'm fine with. You know, I mean, his debut match was okay. I think they went a little bit over and above, I think more for the feel-good moment. But, you know, now you got to continue, you know, a little bit with him. You can't just have that moment and disappear. We had a segment on Dynamite that got some pretty mixed reaction online. Don Callis is still trying to get Chris Jericho to join the Callis family. First, he gives Chris Jericho a painting that depicts them as a tag team, I guess in the early 90s? I mean, I don't remember. I mean, I know Don Callis and Chris Jericho have a long history together. I remember the old podcast that they used to do and everything, but under the tutelage of Bad News Allen, I mean, that kind of escaped me a little bit. Portrait looked nice. Crowd didn't really take too much to it. But then Don Callis proposes a match between Chris Jericho teaming up with Takeshita next week to take on Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia, two members of the Jericho Appreciation Society. So the continuing tease that the Jericho Appreciation Society is done continues. And I think this is important because this is probably going to lead to a match in some way at All In or All Out. This is where this is leading. I mean, nothing different. This is definitely leading to that. They're taking their sweet time, but there's no hint that it's going to lead to a match on one of those two. But it is. This storyline is definitely leading to that. Crowd did not really receive this all that well. It's not that they don't want them to split. I think just a lot of people feel that it's just a forced storyline. I mean, if you know the history with Jericho and Don Callis, why wouldn't Don Callis want Jericho to be part of them? It almost feels like they might be leaning towards a Chris Jericho babyface turn. I don't know. That's what it kind of feels like to me. But then again, with AEW, anything is possible. A lot of things happen, even leaves are us scratching our heads. Later on, we had Anna Jay, not too happy about Chris Jericho calling him selfish. And, you know, we have everybody walking out on Anna Jay. So, you know, Anna Jay, obviously Ty is going to have a baby. So Ty Mello is pretty much out of the picture. Anna Jay, they're not really doing much with her, even when the Jericho Appreciation Society is on all cylinders. So it's probably time to break her away from there. And look, with everything that's going on with Jack Perry, you almost feel like Jack Perry and Anna Jay could be what Sammy Guevara and Ty Mello was a year ago. Do not discount that. That could very well happen. But as far as the Jericho, you know, Takeshita versus Sammy Guevara, Daniel Garcia next week, crowd, I don't know. I don't think they were really that receptive to it. Britt Baker over Taya Valkyrie. I don't know where you go from here, but the next thing we know, we start seeing previews that Nyla Rose and Hikaru Shida are going to be going at it. We see a video package where Jay Lethal sends a message to Ethan Page. We're going to get Jay Lethal and Satnam Singh. Matt and Jeff Hardy are going to be returning. Jeff Hardy, by the way, everyone, I don't know who he interviewed. Somebody had sent me a link earlier, and I just browsed a little bit. But Jeff Hardy did an interview, and he was talking about how the Hardys have been pretty much designated to just rampage recently, and that Jeff Hardy is working his way to get back to being on Dynamite, which I find fascinating, because who would have ever thought that certain people would be demoted to, like, just rampage? I mean, he even called it, like, the B show. Probably the most noteworthy thing coming out of that interview is that Jeff Hardy said that he's 45 years old right now, and he thinks that he could wrestle until he's 50. And he wants to become a world champ again. We had the Lucha Bros defeat Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli and the Best Friends in a main event. As we had a feeling earlier, based on the antics with Jon Moxley attacking Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy did show up at the closing moments of the match. He punches out Wheeler Yuta. He gets into a brawl with Jon Moxley. This allows the Lucha Bros to get the upper hand on the Best Friends, and they hit the Fear Factor on Trent, and they win. So, as of right now, we have a tag team battle royale, I believe, scheduled for Rampage. We have Scorpio Sky versus Kip Sabian, Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose, and The Kingdom will be in action. That apparently is what's booked for Rampage tonight. Collision, I don't know how I feel about this, man. Yeah, we have the tag titles on the line, FTR defending against Adam Cole and MJF. No problem with that. And I wonder if that'll be the night that MJF turns on Adam Cole, or they wait for Dynamite for this to take place. I think, you know, they could wait for Dynamite simply because, you know, there's more viewers and, you know, their feud would be more designed to be taking place on Dynamite than anything else. So that tag match I don't have a problem with. El Hijo del Vikingo, Action Andretti and Darius Martin versus Juice Robinson and the Guns. To me, it's going to be an exciting match, obviously, but that feels like something more designed for Dynamite. I don't really have that much of an issue for that match, but this one I do. Could have Buddy Matthews taking on Andrade. Now, yes, they had a phenomenal match weeks ago at the beginning of Collision when it first started airing. But this time, it is a ladder match, and on the line is Andrade's mask. A mask that he doesn't wear during his match. A mask that, if I remember correctly, it was not more than a month or two ago where he teased that that mask was done. So they're doing a mask, a ladder match with a mask hung up above that Andrade, and I know what people are going to say, well, DT, the meaning of the mask and where Andrade's from, it's more than just the mask and this and that. To me, it's a fucking prop on a ladder. And I don't know. I know the match is going to be great, but putting a mask on a pole that the guy doesn't even wear every, you know, 20, you know, all day. It's not like Rey Mysterio or Dragon Lee or somebody else wearing a mask and that's their gimmick. This is a mask that he takes off and then he has a match. So I don't know. But that is your quick previews for Rampage and Collision. I know next week, I believe they're doing a three-way match, Anything Goes. If I remember correctly, it's Jon Moxley versus Penta versus Trent. Don't, you know, I can't confirm that one right now, but I, you know, I was writing down notes so freaking fast tonight that, you know, I really didn't have time to get into, like, big specifics. I mean, right now, it's not even 11 p.m. Dynamite just went off the air about 40 minutes ago, and I'm trying to get this show up for you as quickly as I can. But so with that said, I'm going to jet out of here. Appreciate the support as always. I will be back next on Saturday, 12 noon, for the Don Tony Show. Keep a lookout. I'm going to put a poll up in the community section on YouTube Thursday by lunchtime. And the poll's going to be simple. We have to address Sunday night, because Sunday night is the Great American Bash. And Sunday, we usually do the sit-down episode. So what I want to know from everyone out there is, do we do the sit-down episode like we normally do? Or should I do a Great American Bash live recap online? Or maybe do the sit-down a little bit earlier in the day? So I will give everybody those options. Don't vote yet. Vote on the poll, because the poll will be the telltale of what we decide to do. I'll put the poll up early on Thursday. This way, by Saturday, we will know what we're going to do on Sunday. And one last thing. I have another poll in the community section on YouTube right now that I would love for everyone to visit for a moment. It has to do with the return of the watch parties. I've had some people asking for it to be returned. The people who run these watch parties had approached me asking me why I stopped them. You know, and I stopped them because a lot of people said they were going to show up and never did. You know, and now, obviously, with the bloodline storyline and things so much deeper with the progression and some of, you know, the momentum with LA Knight and even NXT feeling like it's going to the next level, you know, people think that the watch parties would be much more fun to be part of now interacting. So I have a poll up right now on the YouTube community section, and it basically asks, do you want the watch parties to return? If so, you got to let me know if you want SmackDown to return, NXT, a combination, or if you're not interested. So I would appreciate if everybody could just vote for a second. And this way it gives me an idea if we should bring these back. I don't want to bring them back and then a couple of weeks later just kill them again because a very small number of people show up. If they return, they're going to be handled much differently. The floor will be a rotating system where everybody that wants to get a shot to talk a little bit will. We won't have, you know, the same group on the floor every week, which I loved. I mean, they were energetic and were awesome, but it also intimidated others because they weren't part of the clique that they never, you know, would take part and speak up. So we're going to definitely handle it a little bit differently, but that's only based on your response. So please vote on that. I am out of here. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Keep supporting the website, DonTony.com. If you want to check out our Patreon page, it is patreon.com/DonTony. I know Kev Castle will be doing his KNT Chronicles podcast with Trez, I believe, this Thursday night at 10:15, if you want to be part of that live. And then don't forget, next Tuesday, August 1st, Kev Castle and yours truly will return for your WWE SummerSlam preview and predictions. Everyone, have a great rest of your week. I will catch you all again Saturday, 12 noon, for the Don Tony Show. And as far as Wednesday Night Dynamite, I will see you all again next week, August 2nd. Be well, everyone. All the best. Take care.
That was cool. Yeah.